Well, 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 well. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning. Hello, good evening, welcome. Let me just check my audio levels. Yes, that's looking good. Audio levels on the other side. Yes, a little attenuated. So let's see if we can improve the studio to the obscure. Okay. Alright, that's not really blasted it too much. Anyway, okay. Well, good afternoon, everybody. Good evening. I've just spent like 3 hours on the radio already. My head's starting to go. To which audience I am now speaking with the Journeys with JP, and welcome to Journeys with JP. I am recording good. I'm on air. I am live. We are simulcasting with Wolf Spirit Radio. I am broadcasting initially on Ever Beyond Radio. The main station is Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com and also at revolutionradio.co. Just co. Just not com. Co. We can't afford the M. Anyhow, it's weird. Every time I hear I breathe in, I can hear my breath coming back to me. That's the strangest thing. The strangest thing. Anyway, so today, I've been doing some journeys with some people recently, and they have taken me to some places. So let me just explain what I mean by a journey. It's not really hypnosis. It is done in a relaxed state. It's just a kind of acceptance of whatever somebody might say. That's really the main thing, is a kind of allowance. It's known as holding space. So it's like when your little five-year-old child says, oh, hold this for me, I'm a fairy princess and you're my, you know, donkey or whatever, and you go along with it. You know, you allow the child to do that. It's the same thing, but, you know, it's not a child, but it's giving somebody credence to their journey. Okay, hang on a second. Let's have a look. Apparently my ass is being simulcast too by Colleen. Thanks, Colleen. I done. Yeah. My ass is also live. Oh, it's weird. So, completely lost my train of thought there. So, I'm just going to have a sip more coffee. I made a really nice cafetiere of coffee today. It was really, you know, just by the show. I thought it was get me through. It kind of started to kick in about the second hour, and then Fulford didn't deliver for me today, and I was all flattened. But I did some astrology, which I think worked all right. So, right. Well, where were they? Yes. So, journeys. It's as if I were to say, you know, you come up to me, you give me a call, and you say, okay, I need to explore a movie plot. And you would say, okay, well, what's the scenario? And they would explain the scenario, and they would tell you all about the characters and what would happen in the plot. Or they may enact a scene from it for you in order to get you into the vibe of it and into the understand of it, of its texture, of its message, of its qualities. So recently we've been doing some journeys. People call me for private sessions, and we take a journey here and there. Most of it is to somebody's childhood, because those are where the blockages lie. And we reintegrate. You see, the process is very much, it's very gentle. It's not a harsh, austere process at all. Because, you know, you're dealing with something that is very, very sensitive. Incredibly sensitive. So much more sensitive than you ever give it credit. And how we treat each other. We treat each other with great levels of brutality these days. And, you know, essentially the soul doesn't like being brutalized. It objects completely, you know. The soul has this bubble around it, like 6 feet, you know, in any direction, and gets very upset when anybody crosses the line. Yeah, that's what children do. It's what we all do. We all have that invisible grid. Hey, stay away. Oh, I want to sit on that double seat, just myself. Yeah. Don't come and sit there, big fat man with a suitcase, these sandwiches, egg mayonnaise, you know, egg and onion. Yes, thank you. Sweating. So, sorry. That's so many bad bus rides, you know, that's the worst thing. Or plane rides. Yeah, they're the worst. Even worse is a plane ride because they're much longer. So, I don't know if anyone's calling in. journeys. And the journey is essentially a little trip down the flow of a feeling. Because once you get beyond the emotion of a feeling, once you really get into the feeling of the feeling, then you understand what that feeling is, and you realize that the feelings that you've been feeling are frozen inside your body as a sub-personality. Mm-hmm. Indeed. Okay, so let's have a look in a little while. Thank you. So by exploring a feeling and by giving it permission to exist, by breathing into it, we're able to release and uncover memories and experiences and learning that were lost for millennia sometimes. Sometimes hundreds of years, sometimes whatever. Fragments and shards of our shattered personalities, like the mirror, filmed backwards. So, there's been various journeys. Now, remember in the last show, in the last show, I was talking about this little experience that I had with the, the water pouring through the ceiling, how it became a ceremony, and that the ceremony was of something that we explored in our last night show on journeys with Jess Morocco and Viking, that it pertained to a particular gathering that was going on now. Yes, indeed. I'm joined, or I will be joined in a few seconds, by someone who's just interested in journey. So the journey we've been talking about. Ah, there you go. Good evening.
Hello.
Are you with us? This is JP. You're live.
Hi, JP.
You're live on the air.
Oh, okay. That was quick. Thanks for having me on. This is Brandon.
Hello, Brandon. How are you? Where are you?
Fairly well. I'm in New England, Boston area, Massachusetts. And you're in Scotland, right?
That's right. So do you know Jessica?
I don't know Jessica. I know you. Who's Jessica?
All right. So she's from Boston, you see. I wonder if you may have heard her around on the local sort of circuit. She's a local medium and a psychic reader and paranormal investigator and all sorts of things.
Oh, well, I may know people that she knows.
So there you go. You've probably seen her around anyway. So welcome, Brandon, to Journeys with JP. Thanks. So, so Lyra.
Yeah.
When I say Lyra, it sparks something in you, doesn't it?
How'd you know that? Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't phone in otherwise. So let's take that.
Whoa.
Okay. So I get to the point, man. I get to the point real quick. So let's just get there and move in with this. All right. So just relax. I hope you're sitting comfortably.
Yeah.
And when I ask you to breathe into something, you breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a releasing breath, and it'll help go through anything that is frozen there. So if we now go back to when I mentioned Lyra to you,
mm-hmm.
that it tickled somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Point to it on your body, please.
Okay.
Where is it? Where are you pointing to?
My heart.
In your heart. Okay. Very interesting. Okay. So now, if you were to breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth, and when you breathe in, you breathe into that place where your finger is touching. Okay. And then breathe out through the mouth.
Okay.
You give it another breath. Nice and bigger than the last one. Really, and as you're doing so, you're giving it the ability to expand. You're putting light into it. You're shining floodlights into it. Those floodlights are warm. They're moist. It's gentle. It's allowing it to expand because it's been clenched up by your eyes against the bright sun. And as you breathe into that.
Yes.
If you were to characterize this feeling and stand in front of it, what would it be?
Mm.
Does a cartoon character come to mind or something like that, or a film character?
No. You mean the feeling I get when I'm doing this exercise?
Yes.
Absolutely nothingness. I think since I studied Zen Buddhism, since I was in Taoism, since I was about 12 years old and into this sort of meditation thing, it's always been a sort of nothingness, you know. But if I could externalize it and project it into some sort of affect imagery, it would be... you know, I can't get what's, honestly, when you mentioned Lyra, which was really interesting.
Yeah.
The first thing I thought of was Simon and, how he, had predicted the Lyran, species and how he described them. And then that very weak end, in Doctor Who, there was a Lyran being who, was exactly like, how Simon described with the ears. And so I thought that was very interesting. So that's what really tickled me. So that's what I'm thinking about visually anyway.
All right. So you saw a Lyran on Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And this was maybe a couple of weeks or a week before, when Simon actually had been talking about it on Connecting Consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking, you know, when you guys are talking about Doctor Who. And I love that show, and not just Doctor Who, you're Connecting Consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about, I think one of the chat members' names was Lyra, and he had talked about how specifically how their ears are kind of pointy or different than how most people depict them. And then that Saturday, I think it was the new Doctor Who had aired, and it was with the girl from Game of Thrones. I can't remember her name, but her name's Mi. And she kind of came back in time, she had a Lyran being with her, and the being had, I swear to you, had the exact dimensions of what Simon described, which was, I thought, I mean, you know, the writers must be listening in or something. So.
Well, you know, this is something we wonder, you know. Do they listen to Strange Universe? Certainly. Did the X-Files, Chris Carter, you know, just download all these episodes, right, and just distill this, will you? And, we'll see that. So Lyra has a long story. It's an old story. Hang on. Mm-hmm. Let's just put the old story music on. Hang on. Here we go. Well, let's have some angels. You know, start off with the angels. And then things went a bit. You know. Let's do this. So. I've been having fun. I've just been, using all my my effect sounds that here's one for the oh yeah.
Is that a zipper?
Well, no, it's a record scratch, vinyl record scratch.
That's
there we go.
Quite good.
Anyway, so we're, you know, back in Lyra. Okay, so there are many stories of like what Lyra was, a peaceful place and everybody was really nice to each other and it was a real kind of idyllic environment, until suddenly one day the reptilians arrived and beat the heck out of them, beat the crap out of them, almost annihilated them, took some to be hybridized and cloned and enslaved. Some escaped. Some escaped to other dimensions. Some escaped to the Pleiades. Mm-hmm. So there they were able to regroup and plan a campaign against the reptilians to hold them off. And basically that's what's been going on ever since. And this is like a million years ago. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the stories of Lyra.
Okay.
Does that sound familiar?
You know, two factions fighting off each other in a sort of battle. But what's interesting to me is that if you look at depictions of, I guess, Lyra-like beings with the ears, you know, they're very, like an Egyptian, it's Anubis. You know, with the ears. I don't know if it's, it, or the lion. You know, the lion is on a lot of, royal, hell, you know, kind of like, coat of arms and things like that, I've noticed. And, you know, Trafalgar Square, and it's all over the place. It's symbol of the lion. And I've always wondered if it has, astrological connections. You know, and I wonder if the Pleiades, I was told when I was young, because my grandfather actually taught at one of these colleges in America, they're called the Seven Sisters, okay? And they're all women's schools, because America didn't, well, they had all women's schools, because they weren't co-ed institutions yet. But these schools were, you know, like Sarah Lawrence College and Harvard Radcliffe and Wellesley and places like that, but Mount Holyoke College and Smith College are one of them, and there were seven of them. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the he ladies, the ladies, kind of a pun there, it's the seven star system, is it not?
Well, it's like known as the Seven Sisters, but there are actually like loads and loads of stars, hundreds. In a way, if you imagine that, you're looking down a pipe of stars, that's what the Pleiades really is. It's the, spiral arm streaming out towards outer space.
Oh, wow.
Outer galactic space. That's what the Pleiades is. It's that cluster. So, and it's opposite. It's in Taurus, you see, and it's opposite the, galactic center. So it's the arm that goes the other way, you know?
Right. But it's still, it's on the outskirts. Okay, cool.
Yeah. In my humble, you know, I don't know, I might be wrong. Unless we're really curled around, but if out is towards the outside of the galaxy and then in towards the inside of the galaxy, then out is opposite the side of in, obviously, isn't it? So if that's where the galactic rift is, the great rift, which is the center of the galaxy, is in Sagittarius, between Sagittarius and Scorpio, then the Pleiades are opposite that in Taurus. So there you go.
Wow.
QED. Anyway. So Lyra, where is Lyra? Lyra, if you look up into the zenith, if you look up in the sky and you see the plow.
Okay, yes.
Or the Ursa Major or the Big Dipper, yes.
Right.
Okay, so if it's a saucepan, let's just first go to Alpha Draconis first, Tubin. And if you look at the saucepan, the panhandle, the middle star of the panhandle, and just go up a wee bit towards the Polaris, towards the North Star, you'll come to a faint star, and that is Tubin or Alpha Draconis, which is where our, which is where the, I haven't got it. I haven't even got it set up. All right. Hang on. Let me just see. Oh, there we go. It is where the Alpha Draconians come from.
Right.
You see. Because that's the, you know, that's Draconis. Now, Draconis is a massive constellation.
Right.
It basically curls all the way, 270 degrees around the North Pole. You know, it's a snake, and it snakes its way all around the North Pole. And so, you know, that's where the Draconians come from. It's a snake, it's a dragon, you know, long, snaky, serpenty thing.
Right.
So, Lyra is just close to there. And as far now, which one is Alpha Lyra? I think Vega is Alpha Lyra. I might be mistaken, but Vega is Alpha Lyra, which is the place where a lot of our forefathers, our ancestors, so we're told, come from. And the beings from Vega are pretty much, they're like our progenitors. It's like if we were the, you know, we were like the product of a particular race, that, you know, we'd be, or, you know, you'd start off based with that. You know, it's like the basic operating system. It would be Lyran, and then adding various bits in. And, you know, because of the galactic wars, we need to somehow combine everything and integrate everything in the same way that we do with inner child fragments. That's what my particular angle on healing the galactic rift, because that's what it is. You know, it's, you know, there's brother against brother, but, you know, essentially humans against reptilians is brother against brother.
Sure.
Even though they are green and horrible and mean and untrustworthy and all that stuff. But it's like the Klingons. You know, remember the Klingons in Star Trek?
Right.
Klingons always used to be really badass, and they was horrible. They were always bikers and, you know, but we now get to understand them in the next series, in the next generation. We realize that they were our enemies, and now we can be friends with them because we understand them.
Right.
You know, we did, you know, we go through, we do a journey together, and we see where we're the same, where we're just the same on the inside. We see that we're both feeling the same feeling, but there's a different story. That's all.
It's fascinating. Yeah. You know, I've always heard of, you know, basically two, what you'd call alien races, I guess. Mm. And until a third one, or I guess more recent ones have been introduced to me. One was the Alpha Draconis on one side, and the other were generally referred to as the Merfolk, the Dagon fish people sort of thing.
The Numo.
Is that what it is? Numo.
Yeah, okay. Or the Nomo or something.
Numo, yeah. So, yeah, so, what's interesting is that those two, I mean, you can see, right, you have the queen who is, you know, personified as Queen Elizabeth II, as Alpha Draconis, personified in some way, and or representing it in some way. And then the Pope on the Vatican, on the other hand, wearing his mitre, which is, you know, a fish, from the, basically a fish head, you know,
Exactly. Totally
both.
So, yeah. So yes, the Vatican. Oh God, where do we start with the Vatican? They've stolen everything. They've stolen everything out of the world. And people still take respect for them, but they're basically the biggest bunch of thieves on the planet. They've stolen every piece of art. They've stolen every piece of knowledge. You know, there's the bloody Sumerian Empire. Anyway, meanwhile, those pesky Aldebarans. Meanwhile, back on Lyra. So there are these different beings, different, elemental level beings as well. And beings that, really didn't like being attacked by the reptilians. So they disappeared off the other dimensions and haven't been seen since. And yeah, you were talking about the merfolk.
Yeah.
So that was a very interesting, reference there about people who are able to, you know, morph into a sea creature and then walk on land.
Right. And then it's one of those monomyths, you know, it's throughout all history. And I believe it's the Dagon tribe in South Africa that, you know, relate them to the constellation Sirius. And, you know, you have all types of traditions that come from, a Typhonian character, even Greek mythology, and Abraxas and things like that, coming from, deep in the water. It's kind of, different. It might have a head of a lion, with the body of a snake and things like that. So it's an amorphous, chimera or, you know, a chimera, of being, you know, so I've never really understood, blue avians, this new influx of the blue avian concept as far as I understand it. I mean, I have a sense that there is a sort of evolved bird-like, intelligence out there, and maybe that sparked from my interest in, you know, X-Men and things like that. But, I'm not exactly buying what, David Wilcox and Corey Goodett are talking about. These blue avians that are supposedly, you know, overseeing everything and are gonna make everything okay and that sort of thing. You know, it's almost like, you know, one of my colleagues likes to put it, you know, he likes to reduce everything to the demonic, and which I don't do, but so we have our disagreements, but you know, he would say that, you know, a fifth dimensional entity looking down at a human being would put on a certain mask to fool that entity to see if it would catch on and spread like a virus, a meme, if you will. And so perhaps that's why we have the gray meme going around for quite some time now. Actually, it's probably been maybe too long for that to be true. But this blue avian bit, I'm just not buying it for some reason. It's just, I'm having a kind of a visceral reaction to it. I can't explain it.
Yeah. Well, you see these drawings of it, and I think, it looks like something out of, somebody could easily be made up to look like that and maybe even be teleported into the room, you know, give them a time runner, and we know these things exist, and they can be created, and boom, you know, you got yourself somebody's made up. The other opinion on this, you know, the debunking of the blue avians is that they were, they're implanted into the minds of Illuminati agents and Illuminati people, members as a kind of, trigger mechanism that, you know, it's like
Inception.
Do you remember that little paperclip in Microsoft Office?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Or the little dog, you know, Power Pup. You know, it's a bit like one of those. From what I can understand, it's kind of like a way of, it's like a messaging system. Here is a message from your masters, you know, and there's the blue guy, and it appears before you, but is not what you call real. But it's a program running. So that's one, and like you said, it's conceived. Everything takes place inside the mind of the, Illuminati, person. So that's one opinion. I don't know. I've never seen a blue avian. If I were to say, do blue avians exist in this form? You know, I get no. So, I'm not convinced. And one of the interesting things is that there are things that I devour, you know, information that I devour, and it feels good to read it and to bring it into my consciousness. And there's stuff that is like, it's a bit like, a cheesecake that's not made with real cheese. It's made with tofu, you know. And, you know, you're going to take one bite into this and it's not going to taste what you think it's going to taste like.
Yeah.
And so really ever since David Wilcock started talking about his insider is I've been going off, to be honest, you know, and Sean doesn't like him at all because he says he's nicked all his stuff, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's all his own presentations. So I don't know. We don't like to talk about each other. But I'm still not convinced about the blue avian meme, personally. It doesn't jibe with my own intuition that I'm more and more trying to take a hold and to be in as one with it. Because I know, you know, that's what my teachings are, is that your intuition is your soul. So the more you can, be in that spontaneous place of just being able to allow your mouth to say the words that come into you, into your mind just a second or so beforehand. That you just relax. It's always going to be there. The next words are always going to be there. So just relax into it. And allow this to take place. And then your intuition becomes your voice. Or you become the voice of your intuition, which is the next level up.
Right.
That's the next level.
It's like I remember Allen Ginsberg, a close family member, an uncle of mine was, his job was to track down American poet Allen Ginsberg in New York City, when they were on tour.
Kill him. No.
No.
It's Kerouac.
That's a different uncle. Yeah.
different kind of tracking. Okay, so you wanted to track him down and give him a CD or something.
No, it wasn't. He actually, you know, was a roadie on this pretty infamous tour with Bob Dylan, and so he had to, you know, watch, because Alan would just get lost. He would go to William Burroughs' house, so Uncle would go over there and you know, knock on the door, and William Burroughs said, "Oh, come on in." "Oh, well, you know, no, you just missed Alan, but he left you this note," and it would say, "Dear Patrick, I'm at Patty Smith's house right now," or so he'd run over to Patty Smith's house and, "Oh, you know, you just missed Alan, and you know, he's over in Greenwich Village hanging out with, you know, all these different poets and artists and, you know, Andy Warhol." Just an amazing experience. And so that was his job, was to walk up, try to find Allen Ginsberg in New York City. And I figure how we were relating that. I was trying to relate that to some experience.
So anyway, well, tracking down Allen Ginsberg must be a kind of metaphor for finding the voice for your soul, because that's it. It was all about the voice of your soul.
Yes, that's what I meant to say, is which Allen Ginsberg had a thing where he at one point said that his voice, which would be the throat chakra, was one with his soul, and that everything had a sort of economy of words to it. Like there's a way of writing poetry and verse and epic poetry and so on that can be very, you know, the King James, almost like very, I hate to say Lovecraftian, but it's more like Lord Dunsany and things like that, where everything is just lots of adjectives, right? And where it's not based on an economy of words, whereas this sort of shamanic, I would say, sort of at oneness atonement with the soul and the throat chakra and the voice is really important. I am really trying to balance that. I think you are, you know, a really great example. I really look up to your mastery of that, and try to emulate it, you know, best I can.
Just keep breathing, my friend. That's all it is. It's mm-hmm. just, you have to just keep breathing. There's no other instruction. Just breathe.
Yeah.
You know, just breathe in. Breathe in through the nose if you can. That'll start mm-hmm. spark stuff up. You know, the reason that people don't have anything to say is because they're not breathing.
Right.
And sometimes if they're saying something, they should be breathing rather than just speaking.
Right.
Yeah, it's good. A lot of it is about listening, about being receptive. And, you know, there's some kind of balance between hearing what's on the inside and saying what's on the inside, unpacking it. To me, it feels like a zip file of feeling. You know, the feel, it comes in as a feeling, and as you breathe into the feeling, it kind of unpacks, and oh, there's some, you know, all different, levels of experience of something in that feeling. Yeah, it's got the smells, it's got the taste, it's got the colors, it's got the textures, you know.
Right. It's like a bouquet. Yeah. That's a great metaphor. Yeah.
So in those feelings that arise due to triggering, are hidden those traumas which we carry lifetime after lifetime.
Mm.
And, the buck stops here. Time to, you know, mm-hmm. end this endless cycle of unconnected feeling. It's time to, connect and relate and, bring those feelings into, an integrated, place, which is, you know, to be the continuous human. As like as I said, when you go into a dream and then you wake up thinking, oh, I'll definitely remember this, and then you, of course you don't.
Yeah, I've had those.
Yeah, all the time, you know. And that's what lifetimes are like. That's what it's like, right, to have past life memories, you know.
Right. And the idea is that now that we're conscious of that if you want to, I don't know, people call it karma or past lives or whatever, that now we're at a state where hopefully if we can achieve that serenity, that we can graduate, so to speak, to the end of the purgatory, if you will, of returning to a material existence and suffering.
Well, you know, you talk of purgatory. I just have the feeling that we're all going through some kind of purgatory, you know, in the strict sense of the word, of purgation, i.e. Mm-hmm. letting go of that which does not serve.
Right.
And, you know, I think for my house, what didn't serve is having a loose pipe that just under pressure just exploded. It was great to have it tightened up and brought back in. And now the central heating's come on and I've got two stoves running and it's boiling in here.
How's the puppy, by the way?
It's lovely. It's really nice to have a cup of coffee. I can only drink one a day, otherwise I start talking at talking like Solaris.
I love Solaris, but it's so true. Yeah, she reminds me of my stepmom.
She's the next next octave of awareness you have to get into.
Thank you for you know, leading me through a journey. Like, you know, I've always wanted to call in. I've called into Sean. Sean and I are buddies. You know, I'm on with Douglas Dietrich a lot, on the round tables and various shows here and there and onto different projects and things like that. So it's really great to connect with you, especially JP, because you have a very, very beautiful relationship with Simon, which I've been following from the very beginning for Connecting Consciousness. I mean, I know now that it's just like, I mean, the amount of emails. I remember the last show you put up on YouTube was, you know, you were saying, please people do not send me any email, you know, where I'm just going to block it or whatever it was, because it was just now it is piling up so much.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. What I actually need is for somebody, for me to take them all, put them in a database, and for somebody to filter through all of these questions and put them in some sort of sensible order.
Right.
And group them by topic, and maybe we can do like a topic show. So if anybody wants to volunteer, I can shove them a whole. They need to be savvy. I'm not here to educate anybody. If you know how to use a database or Excel
spreadsheet,
then you know I can help, and or you can help. You can help me.
I could take 100, or you know, I'll start off with 100. I'll help you, JP.
I'll collect some up and see how you get on, and
sure.
Because they arrive in the when you put them in the right place, they arrive into a database on the web.
Mm-hmm.
And I can export from that database and send you the questions and things like that. Similarly, right. I'm going to do the same thing with Alex Collier as well. So perhaps there's going to be some sort of big kind of question and answer site that has question and answers from all sorts of people. And
right, because I remember you bring it, and I think Simon made a really great point about the frequently asked questions portion of his website, and he thought about having that. But the problem is, as he pointed out, that people do want to hear themselves, their question, their name being answered on air, even though a lot of times Simon does have to repeat, and I'm sure you're tired of it, the same questions that he's been at. And as, even as a fan and listener, I'm just like, oh, you know, he's talked about that in so many times. But it's amazing how, you know, empathic Simon can be, because he understands that, you know, someone wants to connect with Simon, you know, which I do even, you know, and I haven't yet, but I know I will. And when that comes, that will be very, you know, a cool thing. And, you know, you don't want to take that totally away from people, but yet how do you coalesce so, you know, probably thousands of, I would imagine, thousands of questions, or at least hundreds of questions, into, you know, some sort of framework, you know, of, you know, because, you know, there are trends that you can pick out, or patterns within the questions that you know, could be answered. And by the way, Alex Collier, he's making quite the comeback as well. I'm really, really happy to see that. You know.
Oh, absolutely. There's so many layers of it that, you know, it's great to have our elder. You know, he's like an elder brother. Right. And he's been out on the fringe in the wilderness. And, you know, he just has been just very edgy, you know, for him to come all the way back from where he is. He's not all the way back yet, but he's doing it. And it is, through the help of everybody, you know, through everybody buying him the price of 2 cups of coffee a month, maybe even a round of coffee for your mates. That's all it's going to cost you. And that keeps him in an apartment. It keeps him warm and safe and able to heal his body, which is what he needs.
Absolutely. I think, a lot of people like to deny the physical, you know, and, you know, think all spiritual, but, you know, as my Zen Buddhist teacher told me, body important too, you know, and, because it's your vessel. You know, and also it's your temple. So, you know, you have to honor your temple and, you know, for your spirit to manifest those subtle energies into absolute. Not to say that, you know, you can't experience the divine rapture or anything, or experience without neglecting your body. You sure can, but, you know, it definitely helps to be healthy place. And I'm really glad that, you know, Alex has drawn it to, even Simon has often mentioned Alex Collier and his talks as well. And it was really great to see them get together, for the round table that you had, I believe. And, that was absolutely excellent. So I recommend everybody checking that out. Studio 9 Jam, I think is the name of the YouTube.
Correct. Correct. Studio 9 Jam. You can also come through Ever Beyond Radio. And also wolfspirit.tv, I think it's available on there. It's a, well, it will be, cause if that isn't, I'm going to have to do it now. But it's just a little poster there. But essentially, it was something that people have been asking for, and it's something that I like to do, is to bring people together. And one of the things that I noticed was that nobody was allowing them to ask any questions of anybody else. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be nice? How nice would it be to have Alex Collier asking somebody a question? Right. And so this whole thing built up, and, Jim and Tolek were really enthusiastic and kind of, so G-ing up. So, everybody had a really nice time, a really enjoyable time. So it's going to happen again. And the other thing that's going to happen is I'm going to get some, female, counterparts as well. And, we'll be talking about, you know, we'll still be talking about those pesky Aldebrands and, how to deal with them and their stupid shenanigans of what they've been up to.
Right. Now the Aldebrands, those are from the Aldebaran system, which is the bullseye, right?
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
The big red star, you know, that's essentially they're the original separation kind of energy of like all that is good and everything else.
Right.
And I think the Star Trek episode called Skin of Evil is essentially, do you remember that one?
Next Generation.
Yeah. Okay. Next Generation, the one that, where Tasha Yar was killed.
Oh, I got it.
You see William Riker, he's embedded in this, black goo. You
know? Huh.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Take note, Mr. Pro.
Yeah, huh. So there was this black goo. So we got, this, energy of separation. What they did in this episode was they banished all their negative feelings to this other place. And then they gathered this thing and they schlepped it off to another planet. And they're all going, happy, happy, happy on their nice, perfect world. And there's this angry, resentful, jealous sludge that is murderous, and it took one of the crew's life, and nearly took Riker, but they managed to persuade it so that it didn't eat Riker. It just spat him out again. Obviously, his ego, it couldn't handle Riker's ego.
Or the beard.
So that's the energy of Aldebaran, this very separative. It's, you know, just think, what do they call it? Apartheid. Just think, Nazi Germany. Just think, Nazi USA, you know, just think New World Order. It's Jim the Übermensch and the Untermensch. And they speak German on Aldebaran. Anyway, meanwhile, have I got that? Where's that? Where's my meanwhile? Is it there? No, not on that one. Really? Oh, I thought it was on that one. Where was it? Oh, I've got that. Ah, that doesn't work. Oh, that's no good. But I do have this. Yeah, see? It's number six. All right, hang on. Where's number six? No, that's number six. Thunder, that's five. That's five. All right, that's six. And that's
The Howl.
Silly me. Area code 239. Who's that and where are you?
This is K-Girl.
K-Girl. Hey, K-Girl.
And I'm in Florida.
Florida. Spell F-A-L-F-L-A-W-D-A. Florida.
F-L-O-R-I-D-A.
So, apropos of nothing whatsoever, you wish to speak of non-Lyra.
Non-Lyra, yeah. I have a question. I put it in the chat room a while back because I got Ray. I said, Ray, you need to call in. And then we didn't get to my question, but that's okay. I just wanted to ask you about a couple of things about chemtrails, the treaty that, you know, the Cameron Treaty, and what you said your guides told you about a treaty, and if you think that treaty might be it, because we don't really know if it's, you know, real or not, because there's still chemtrails, and that was supposed to stop back on the 8th or 9th or whenever. So that was my question. Three parts.
Okay, three parts. I don't know. B, I don't know. C, I don't know. D, I don't know. Right, so now you know that I know nothing. I'm going to make up some stuff and see if it works. No, but basically what my guides were saying was not about chemtrails. It was a much bigger cheese that is being cut here. All right. Because what the guides were saying, all right. So what the guide said to me was that the planet Nibiru has been, delayed using a gravitational technique that is available. Using gravitational technology, but in order to do so, certain treaties had to be observed, which brings a new level of recognition to humanity. What we're saying is that they didn't allow this thing to just wipe us off the face of the planet. They realized that there's something going on here that is special, and so they've held it back so that they can see what happens to us. Clinging to the outside of the hull of this spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the hull. That's where we are. We're on the outside of the hull. I just want to reiterate that. People, we're on the outside of the hull traveling through the ocean. Right. Anyway. So, chemtrails. I don't know. Where am I?
Only because.
I really don't know. All I know is that they're dumping crap in the upper atmosphere because there's no laws against it.
Right.
And it's making everybody ill, but I don't know if they're doing it deliberately or because they just don't give a toss. Honestly. Right. And there's nothing I can do about chemtrails. The only thing I can do about chemtrails is avoid them.
Yes, that's good. So the other part is, did your hearing from your guys about this new thing, that new, I'm just calling it, because you used the word treaty on whatever show you were talking about.
Mm.
So did that kind of correspond with when that Cameron thing came online?
Sorry, I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, you did. Well,
what's this Cameron thing going online? What?
The Jaguar, you know, your friend the Jaguar lady. She posted it.
My friend the Jaguar lady.
You know, Carrie Cassidy.
Oh, right. Well, I don't watch everything. I don't see everything that I told you. I've not been paying attention to the world, and that includes the alternative world. So people, you're going to need to fill us in a little bit before you start into, you know, that Carrie woman. All right. Okay. So wind us back. Tell us what you're talking about on a more practical level that I can relate to, because I have no idea what you're talking about. All right.
Okay. Carrie Cassidy posted this announcement, okay? And Dottie read it out on her show the other day. I can't remember who she was talking to right now. And it had all these things in there about what was going to be stopped and what was going to happen, and all about the what they're calling the Comprehensive Assets Protection Program, which is CAPP, which has to do with the money that, you know, the gold, whatever. And all other sorts of things that's in there. And I can send it to you, but if you haven't read it, it doesn't matter. Well, I was just wondering.
Three little words, K-Girl. I don't know. Yeah. Three little words. I don't know. I really don't know. So look, we're going to be back in an hour, and I'll talk about more stuff that I don't know about. Okay. Please stay tuned. This is Journeys with JP on Revolution Radio. Listener supported station, go while the adverts are going, turn it down and go to the site support, really any of those things. Like I say, you know, I've really been focusing on my own thing and not what anybody else has been saying or doing. Aside from, you know, proofreading Sean's book, that's, you know, where I've had my head buried for the last week. So, it's, you know, there might be a lot of very interesting things going on around the world, but I've got nothing to do with them. let's just pick up that keyboard.
That's great.
I am joined tonight by guest Brandon Young. Hello, Brandon. How's things going in your world?
Quite nice right now. I just came through a very bitter few weeks, and I'm coming out of it, which is nice.
You didn't have a relationship breakup by any chance, did you?
In a sense I did. A brother of mine, a best friend since seventh grade, passed away very suddenly and unexpectedly, a few weeks ago and 2 weeks ago. And then, the next week, that's the next Sunday, my dog of 15 years had passed away as well. Very suddenly, and, you know, so it was a very, tough time for me.
So I'm very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
It's loss and grieving. I mean, these are part of the things that, you know, was this little event of mine last night about grief? Were these tears of mine? Or were these tears of all the people that I've made? You know, is this karma? Am I carrying the tears of all the people that I've made cry in all my lifetimes? I'm not quite sure what that means. Perhaps it's both. You know, perhaps we cry the same amount of tears as we make other people cry.
Mm.
If the laws of karma were fair, that would be true. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Well, there are tears of joy. You know, like they say, you go through stages of grief, right? There's that whole paradigm of, well, denial, anger. And I agree that there is that. However, I feel it all at once. You know, when it hits me, it hits me like a wave. You know, I mean, I'm just thinking he's always there, and he's not going to be there. You know, it's just, yeah, I have to get through my head. So I'm in denial, you know, but I'm also angry at, you know, very quick tempered, you know, and then sad at the same time. And then, you know, I accept it and distract myself with things like, you know, writing a new forward to a book that's coming out and things like that. So, you know, I understand what you mean by creating. When you are an artist and you're creating your own thing, I think John Lennon even said it, you're not really paying attention to what other people might be doing, you know, because you're so involved in your own artistic endeavors. So, but anyway, it's, you know,
exactly. And that's what, you know, that's why I'm not able to answer questions. What do you think of so-and-so and such-and-such?
Sure.
And so, you know, I told you why I don't, sort of tend to go towards different things and why I go towards some things and not others.
Right.
Because, you know, this is just my reasons and I am no one. You know, I really am totally no one. I just have a nice voice and I read out things. Just no one.
You're also very humble, JP, but, yeah, you know, you're right. It's just, you know, we all have our talents and our gifts, I think. And you know, we just have to use them to the best of their ability. But yeah, if you're in the creative mode and you're writing, you know, you're not reading, obviously, you know, because you're writing your own material. You might be reading your own material and things like that. But let's say music, you know. If you're creating music or a record, you're not really going to be listening to, you know, anybody, you're not going to really be getting into somebody else's album too much because you're going to be focused on your own work, you know? And so, yeah, I get that all the time as well. I get some people who think I can comment on, you know, the South China Sea Wars of, you know, 1849 or whatever. And I just don't know. And I think that's very honest. And even Socratic wisdom, which is to say, you know, you don't know, but you know that you don't know. And that's an honest way to, you know, start your philosophy, you know, your axiomatic way of thinking, your epistemology, if you will.
Yeah, you have to find where your foundation hits reality and start from there, axiomatic reality, exactly. Exactly. Because a belief system, becomes an axiomatic reality for people. And that's where, you know, that's where it all starts and where it all fails at the first thing, because you're basing your reality on, you're making assumptions that are not true. You've just been told them that they've been true. You've been bullied into believing that they're true, but they're not really true.
Right.
Right. So, now where was I going with that? I'm not quite sure where I was going with that, but we started off talking about Lyra and about how, the story went that, that they were attacked by reptilians and stuff like that. So this is one of the great traumas of humanity, that we carry all the way back from there. Is that we have this fear of reptiles. Even to the point that we don't like snakes on a subconscious level. And I tell you what it is. I work in a studio situation a lot and there are wires trailing across the floor. And I tell you, nobody feels comfortable unless all those wires are tidied up. Nobody will relax unless all the wires that, as we say, are snaking across the floor are tied it up. Subtle, but check it out.
Wow. No, I completely agree with that. A lot of people say to me, you know, what's your worst fear? You know, it's not even death or, you know, anything like that. It's just, I don't like snakes, you know, I just really don't. However, I know that there is a rite of passage in some tribal societies, and maybe even other society, and I don't know any nation that does this, but where a young boy who has come of age will be put in a room with, you know, a giant anaconda for a few days, so they can overcome that fear and perhaps, you know, even learn something from the snake. Because the serpent always represents sort of kundalini and energy and that sort of thing. And I think it is a fascinating animal, but it does not stop the subconscious built-up trauma, as you say, the worldwide catastrophic trauma, you know, because we're essentially a humanity with amnesia, I think. And we're recovering from that
It seems to happen over and over again. That's the thing, you know, the same issue happens over and over again. It starts off, say, in Lyra. Maybe it happened before that.
Right.
And the fracture keeps going and it becomes, you know, the nice desert island that is then taken over by the Chinese or the Americans, you know, or the Falklands or this and that. These nice little places that were very nice, and then suddenly they're not nice anymore. Mainly because we're on the outside of the surface of the hole. But just like, given that we're on the outside of the hole, there are some places that are still quite nice, and they just want to sully that. And that, you know, in some way, doing that sullying also adds fuel to their fire, which is. So this is part of the, you know, their destructive berserker kind of mode thing.
Yeah, what's that all about? You think that's about ushering in a new sort of paradigm of basically hell on earth to bring, you know, for what cause? Just to rule? I mean, for dominion? For sort, you know,
here's
for
the thing.
People.
You said it.
Yeah.
You said it. About 5 minutes ago, humanity is going through an initiation rite. And so we must pass through this world of apparent fears as if we were in a tank with a shark. Just be cool. Just be ultra cool and just swim calmly to the side and get out the steps. And then you can shake.
that's true because
go through it and realize what you're in. Realize that you're in a ceremony. You're in a rite. You're in a ritual. So when you go through your life, you realize that you're being tested in exactly the same way. You're going through the same process as that 14-year-old boy or girl.
Mm-hmm.
And, like I said, by the way, has anybody had a dream where they're in a tank in a swimming pool and there's a shark in it?
I have, I know that. Like, not very often, but I know for a fact I have, yeah.
Interesting, isn't it? It's very common, isn't it?
Is it common? Yeah.
Well, I've had one. I've had one, certainly. And obviously, I didn't get eaten this time.
I think I got eaten.
Oh, you got eaten?
I did. I kind of submitted. It was, I mean, this thing was a mega shark, you know, and it was no doubt it was just going to rip me to shreds or something like that. So I just kind of float. I remember it was in like almost a John Lilly style deprivation tank, you know, and I kind of sank to the bottom in a lotus position, let off all my breath. So I just sank to the bottom. This is one of my more vivid dreams. And I just remember, you know, this giant mouth and razor sharp teeth coming at me and just, you know, there's some sort of endorphins. And I hate to, you know, be materialist about this, but, chemically in the brain when you're about to die, there's some sort of endorphins that, may be related to DMT that, kick in as you're about to die. So perhaps that was some sort of peace that I was getting. Anyway, the point is that I was totally at peace and submitted to this sort of serpent-like, shark eating whole. And once it swallowed me whole, like Jonah and the whale or something like that, everything was fine. It took me on this glorious ride, around the oceans, you know, and things like that. And he was like my friend, you know. And I thought of the corniest thing, which was, you know, that The Doors, Jim Morrison's song, where he says, you know, you have to ride the snake. And if, you know, if you're afraid of it, it will sense your fear and it will bite you and kill you, you know. But if not, it will take you on a ride. But yeah, that was one of the most vivid personal recurring dreams I've had. I don't remember all of them. They evolve and change as they go along in my life. I also have one of a deluge, which I also think is linked catastrophically in the psyche of the human being. This big giant flood, you know, like a giant wave, miles, miles high, just coming at, and again, it's another thing where you just have to, you know, hold the hand of your loved ones and, hug and just look at this thing, and you have to submit to the fact that you're going to die, you know, and, so I have had those dreams, you know, they're very, very interesting. Most of my dreams are very fleeting. I'm not the type to astral travel, or anything like that. I don't really have those powers or anything as far as I know. You know, I do know of them, but yeah, dreams, I do have some very vivid, very prophetic ones as well.
So that's very interesting that, you know, you decided to submit to the shark, and it took you on a journey rather than annihilated you.
Yes.
Maybe I'll try that next time. I'll see, you know, rather than just go to the side. Oh, okay. All right. Go for it. Dive into the mouth.
I didn't even dive in. It just kind of, you know, it swallowed me. Uh-huh. And yeah, it just, you know, I came out the other end, you know, and next thing you know, I'm riding it around like it's, you know, some kind of giant dolphin that can fly or something like that. Like I say, very fleeting, like, you know, pastiche kind of a dream. But yeah, what an amazing one that was, because I mean, up until that point, I had childhood fears of a snake-like water creature, because I hate, you know, I mean, I still don't want to believe that there are snakes that live in water. You know, even though my girlfriend tells me there are water snakes around here. I just want to deny it, you know. you know what I mean? So, but there are, so that's been a primal fear of mine. And so throughout childhood, I was very, very afraid of these things for a bit, not too afraid, but a little bit. And, it was a recurring dream. So it wasn't a shark. So it was a bit of a hybrid again. Definitely a shark's mouth, almost like, you know, classic Jaws type of thing, you know, submitting to it because, you know, what else are you going to do? You're going to fight. It's almost, you know, it represents the cosmic death, you know, the big crunch of the, you know, how are you going to fight that? You know, you have to submit ultimately, I think.
There was a Monty Python sketch in one of the records, which is to be the competition. It was like what do they call it? Just on Frontier. It's a knockout. The game was to be eaten by a shark in the swiftest possible time. So it's just maybe they keyed into that scenario as well. But what's interesting is your. You were talking about the idea of an enormous wave, the huge tsunami, you know, not the 2 or 3 meter one or the 20 meter one, but the 1,000 meter one.
Yes.
Now evidence has occurred that, there were two events like this, one large and one small. And this has just been, researched by Graham Hancock.
I was just thinking that. Yep.
So, you may be talking from the standpoint of remembering something. Now, what do they call it? It's not catastrophe. It's catastrophobia is one of the things, but, I'm just trying to remember. There's the name. Ah, yes, it is. Cataclysm.
Ah, yes.
Now, I, for various reasons, several years ago, ended up in a island called Cyprus, which is in the Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, 10,000 or so years ago, the Mediterranean was a valley.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that this event caused a wave to go over the top of what was then a solid barrier between the Atlantic Ocean and the Mediterranean.
Oh, wow.
And evidence has built up that that's actually happened many times before, because right. The seabed of the Mediterranean is layers of salt and silt.
Right.
So where it's been fresh water, it's been silting, and where it's been seawater, eventually it evaporates over millions of years, becomes a salt bed, and then, becomes a valley, and then some other catastrophe chucks another whole load of water over the edge. But the last time the earth expanded and cracked and moved apart, and so Gibraltar and Morocco now are further apart than they used to be.
Right.
With a big hole, which now leaves the mountains, of this valley, just a little island in the middle of the Mediterranean. Which we call Cyprus.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Now when I was visiting Greece and the Greek islands, there was a volcano. No, inactive volcano, but it was still pretty cool. You walk up there, and this is what the Greeks island referred to, this was the Hades to them. And, you walk up this volcano, and it's still got that energy, that heat and that energy. And it's interesting that, that makes a lot of sense that it was the valley sort of mountain range. But, you walk up to the top of it, and, there's the whole, you can see a little bit of magma, things like that. It's not too hot. It has such powerful energy, you really understand the idea of volcanism. And the cool thing is, the trick is to totally let yourself go as if you're about to fall in, to the magma and the hole. What happens is that the energy coming out of the volcano itself will catch you. So you're about to fall and it will just catch you right in midair. And you can just kind of sit there for as long as you want it's just quite an amazing experience. And I would say that the Mediterranean and I think Plato, as Graham Hancock points out in Fingerprints of the Gods and I think Footprints of the Gods is the new one, where he it's really scientifically proven and based, and he went through a lot of work to put this out. And it is pretty clear that Plato was pretty much had the date correct for one of the catastrophes, at least, the cataclysms. Which, would date it to about, 12,500 years ago. Which was the sinking of Atlantis and things like that. Do you see Atlantis as one sort of, place that was, just sunk? Or do you see it as sort of like, a confederation of city states?
Well, that's a very interesting question as to what was Atlantis.
Mm.
Who was Poseidon? Who were the vassal kings who ruled over Atlantis?
Mm.
What was Utopia? Where was it? The main thing is, like, everybody says, oh, there is Atlantis in the Baltic. There is Atlantic and there's Atlantic in the Mediterranean. There is Atlantis in the Atlantic. Oh, that sounds more obvious. It's everywhere. So it must have been on you know, much of the landmass, as today's civilization is much of the landmass, much of the coastline, really. But the thing is, you know, again, this goes back to another cataclysm that happened in our solar system, which is part of the war against the reptilians that started on Lyra. And that is the destruction of the planet called Maldek.
Okay.
Okay, it is now what we call the asteroid belt.
Okay, yeah.
And this goes back something of the order of 120 million years ago. All right, this war has been going on a long time. All right. And there was a reptilian base inside this planet, underneath the planet surface, and they had essentially a bunker buster kind of weapon that blew the planet to bits and has been known as the Pleiadian Mistake. Not only did it blow the planet to bits, but they also were knocking out a base on Mars, which was like kind of a forward base, early warning base. So they basically nobbled the early warning base so that they were blinded and couldn't see when the big weapon came in.
Right.
Go ahead.
Sorry. This was the reptilians did this to the lions.
No. So the story is that some of the Lyrans escaped to the Pleiades and formed a war council. So the most warlike of the Lyrans, who said, we're going to get these bastards back, they went to the Pleiades, regrouped, played the long game, healed themselves, but they still, here's the thing, everybody is suffering from PTSD.
Mm.
Everybody's been traumatized, so nobody can really see properly what's really going on. Anyway.
Right.
So there's a Pleiadian plan that basically, we're in an important connection in the spiral arm. We're like a junction, like Sirius is. It's a junction. So we're part of that sort of junction system. And we're on something like what they call it, the ninth highway or something. Anyhow, it's like a route. Yeah, it's like Route 66 interstate. So intergalactic route. And some people stop over, it's like a service station. And,
sure.
You buy technology from the Martians and all this stuff. Anyhow, so the Lyrans, some went to Pleiades, regrouped and, decided to, start taking back our sector. You can imagine. Just imagine. We're going to take it back from them green bastards. So this solar system was a strategic point of resisting the reptilian advance. Pushing them back. So if we could take this system, then we have a major advantage in this sector of the galaxy. That makes sense. I mean, we've seen,
it does.
It makes sense we've seen it in sci-fi films. There is, the great battle planned. And, the idea was that there was an EMP blast that was supposed to hit Mars and knock out the early warning system only.
Mm.
Okay. And then there was this big bunker busting, weapon that was supposed to knock out the base. Although some people still insist that it was going to knock out the entire planet. So the story goes is that the first one, the Martian one, didn't quite go as planned, and instead of just taking out the base as an EMP blast. So it would have basically released the reptilian control of all the people, because it would have destroyed the equipment that was causing them to be under reptilian control and mind control and all that stuff. In come the Pleiadians with their dog war, you know, dogs of war, and, you know, battle, things. And the EMP went wrong. It set fire to the oceans in some way. Perhaps they'd been fracking. Perhaps that's what fracking's about. But it set fire to the oceans and ate all the oxygen in the atmosphere. And that's what happened to Mars. And that's why Mars is so screwed.
And that's why there are canals on Mars. Yep. But, yeah.
Dry. A lot of it is underground. Same thing, fracking. They pump the water underground.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a very, I mean, insidious venture, to say the least. I mean, and, I'm not just talking about the documentary and political movement that's been going on, but if people think about, you know, water and just how important it is, and that, you know, those are essentially the veins of a conscious being. Planet, you know,
exactly,
and you know, it's like you're drilling in. And it's almost like an intentional thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like you're taking a stick and poking it in somebody's eye.
Right.
Yeah, it really, really bloody hurts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so,
a solar system is a conscious being, you know, and it's got 12 eyes, you know, and our solar system is all out of whack. Right? Because, right, all these things that we see is, oh, isn't that wonderful? And look at that, a comet. You know what a comet is? A comet is a lump of maldek that is burning up in the sunlight.
Right.
A dirty snowball, indeed. Where does the snow come from? It comes from water.
Right. That's right.
Right? Where does the dirt of the dirt snowball come from? That's maldek. So, the destruction of Maldek has had a profound influence on all of our lives, whether we're part of this solar system or not, because it was, you know, it was a consciousness. And so we all feel, like you say, we feel these archetypal feelings of like, something's wrong, something's missing, something's out of whack.
Right.
That's very spectacular. You know, you could be looking at a firework display, or you could be looking at a battle.
Right. Right. Exactly. Right. Well, it's just interesting to me because it's like everything's off balance and you have the idea. It seems to be distilled through the divination arts and through different literature and mythologies and things like that. That, you know, there was once this golden age where the planets were aligned, perfectly, and the music of the spheres were, you know, perfect in every way. And there was a golden age, until, this cosmic war, as you're describing it, which, I mean, is science, is basically science. And we're not talking, you know, hysterical conspiracy belief or anything like this. I mean, Microsoft is investing in, or already has, you know, invested in going to the asteroid belt to mine, you know, the water resources and different things that are there. So we know for a fact that, you know, there's investment behind this thing. And it's just very interesting to me that, alchemy in a way has always been a way for human beings to try to regain paradise, or, you know, essentially the Adam and Eve, the Garden of Eden story, you know, but trying to get back, through various means, through language, which was confounded and confused, which you could, you know, or, through various other means, which I think, is a bit, you can tell me your take on this, in the transhumanist movement, which I've heard Simon talk about as the AI, which must be resisted at all costs, and I tend to agree But he has a very unique, I can't remember exactly what he thinks about that, but it's very interesting. And it seems to be an artificial construct where people think that, you know, they fear death, so they want to live forever and continue on their lives forever. But, you know, that's sort of unnatural. But it's also, in a sense, their way of conquering or regaining Eden, where, you know, you couldn't die, where it was a golden age, where, you know, everything was fine again. I mean, you can go through any, yeah, I'm just using Christians as an example, or the Hebrew Bible.
All right, so let me just outline what the golden age was, because it was a real thing. Mm. And it was, okay, well, there was, there have been various levels of it. And, you know, we can talk about I don't know very much about the Indians. They have these stories called the Vedas.
Yes, that's right.
And, they talk about blue beings, not bird beings, but humanoids, who are super cool and very wise and, whereas all the human hotheads are running around battling, there they are sitting in this kind of strange, you know, sort of time bubble.
Right.
You know, Arjuna's talking to Krishna and he's kind of hanging out playing his flute, you know.
Oh, I was just thinking that exact image. That's so funny.
So there he is being super cool. So these are Vegas. These are the original ones. They are the Lyrans.
There's
blue Lyrans, you see? There's the blue Lyrans, the Vegans. They really run the show, like Shiva and Krishna and Brahma and all these people. They're like archetypal beings, but they are people too. You know, they have their own lives. And on the archetypal level, which is like a level of reality that is very, very real, we only suffer the consequences of what happens on that level.
Mm-hmm.
And the consequences of that is that the gods are the gods are, it's there. Uh-huh. Let me just get my teeth right in there. The gods are imperfect. Hang on a second. The gods are imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Hang on. Yeah, right. The gods are imperfect. Yeah. They behave like children.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And
right.
Our existence due to them on their archetypal plane, on the fifth dimension or the sixth dimension or whatever dimension they're on.
Sure.
It spills over into our world and we then have to mop up the shit.
Right.
I can say shit because he says shit in the middle of the butt thing, I think. So if Adam Kokesh can say shit, I can say shit. And, you know, we have to deal with the shit. I have to deal with lots of shit. Chicken shit, actually.
It's a useful word.
Very useful word. But anyway, we can actually substitute the word material, said in with quotes, or stuff is another one. They all have stuff and we are dealing with it en masse.
Right.
So all these enormous wars that are happening in the world are because the archetypals are in conflict inside themselves.
Gotcha.
Right.
And
now,
they play out through us. Aries is in conflict. Right.
Correct.
Okay.
But here's the thing. It's a two-way street. So if one fragment of that great consciousness gets it, stands outside of the thing and said, oh, hang on a second, guys. Hang on. Hey, stop this. Hang on a second. I've just realized. Hang on. Stop. Oh, you. Over there. No, stop. 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 Calm down. Take it away. All right. I've just figured this out.
Right.
And then... as a movement, as a being, because an archetype is like thousands of people in a
That's fascinating. That is fascinating. Because what I, you know, what I'm thinking about is the trickster god, you know, and how the trickster god is constantly portrayed as sort of evil and things like that, but he's sort of caught on to it as a game, you know, and he knows that, say, the, you know, Loki of the Norse gods, you know, he knows that they're imperfect, you know, he knows that Thor can be, you know, wooed by, you know, appeal to his vanity or for need or whatever. And so he can trick him. And it's almost like a cosmic joke to say, you know, you're an imperfect god as well. You know, but you're right. Like these archetypes, on the fifth or sixth dimension filter down through us who act them out here on this, chessboard. But it's on a small
correct.
Scale.
Correct. Yeah. It's on the smallest possible level of detail.
Right.
And as they say, the devil is in the detail. So we're rooting out what that devil is. And the devil are these feelings of, these artificial feelings of feeling alone and feeling hungry.
Mm.
Because from those feelings, all trauma develops.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Anyway.
I agree. Yeah.
So that's the kind of root of things. And when you get down to that, which is where we're at, we realize that, you know, somehow it's to do with some kind of, that the AI is almost like a kind of space fungus.
Right.
Yeah. When you get to that point, and you realize that there are processes that are going on that are mirrors and reflections of what we see in our everyday life. You know, people who are wandering around enormously obese because they consume a large amount of yeast and a large amount of sugar, and they're basically an enormous loaf.
Yeah.
They're doughboys.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah? Big Pillsbury.
Yeah. I love that guy.
Now, you look at, and look at the character of the yeast. The yeast is alone and hungry, right? So it eats to feel less alone, you know, by trying to find more of itself, more yeast. So let's eat more bread, eat more risen food. Leavened food.
I was just thinking that.
All right, get this. Beware the leaven of the Pharisees.
That's right. Yes.
You're with me, eh? All right.
With you.
So, the leaven is a metaphor for hype, right? Overinflation. And it's also a direct reference to the agent, the ancient nanotech agent that has been the downfall of humanity, and we have been seduced into it.
Wow.
Yeast.
Yes.
Yeah, because yeast was given to us, who by? By Ra, Ray, the god.
Egyptian. Is that gods. Right?
Yeah. Uzum, bread and beer, came from Egypt. And the thing that they call the paleo diet, the food that everybody else was eating before this happened.
Right.
Yeah. But the thing about, you know, the bread and the beer is what, it was delicious, you know, bagels.
Sure. Yeah, and the beer was healthier because the water was distilled and
more purified, yes. So, and disinfected by the alcohol, you see, which is why you could drink it. You don't need to take my, essentially, here's the thing, here's a concept for everybody, the use of alcohol. Now, when I started talking with various so-called inanimate objects, one of the things I started speaking to were quartz crystals, and they, instead of saying, I said to them, you know, do you want to be cleansed? And they said, yeah. And so how they do that, and that's, they said, with alcohol, please. With vodka. Mm. And, it turns out that they were, they used alcohol to clean the crystals in Atlantis.
Yeah.
And, that, essentially corruption seeped in, so to speak, mm-hmm. because they started drinking the cleaning fluid.
Hmm. Okay.
There's a thing. Anyway, so use of so the bread and the beer has become lager and hamburgers.
Right.
Yeah, and there's you know, there are yeasts that are not as mind controlling as this, but there are certain things like lager. Has got this right. kind of particularly lonely feeling to it. You know, oh, I can't yeah. drink lager on my own. How can I possibly, you know, you could have a brandy on your own, but you can't drink lager yeah. on your own. Oh, it's just, I'll just go to the fridge and have a lager just on my own. No.
That's a bit sad, yeah.
No, nobody does that. If I want to have a drink on my own, I just go to the fridge. You know, in fact, I don't ever drink lager. It just right. makes me feel very, very ill indeed.
Yeah.
Even before I drink it, it's like, oh no, please, please, please. My body's saying, please, 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 don't put that in me. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, yeah. it's like drinking bleach. Anyway, it's cleaning yeah. fluid, right? You know, too much alcohol in it is going to rot your brain. And anyway, I don't want to upset everybody, but so, <Yeah. laughs> so there's this yeast growth. Now here's the thing about it. It's hungry, right? It's alone and it's hungry and it feels alone and it feels hungry. And so it just wants and it wants and wants and wants and wants more and more and more. And, yeah. When it doesn't get what it wants, when it's hungry, it gets really, edgy. This, but you wouldn't like
also.
Me. Like the Hulk, you wouldn't like me when I'm hungry.
Right.
And, if you, my characterization of this entity is Chris Christie.
Oh yeah. Okay.
To me, he is yeah. a walking mountain of this material.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so there's your characterization of the feeling for me.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeast.
Mm-hmm. So as I said, this is came as a gift from Ra. Mm-hmm. And. If you think about it, Passover is a yearly yeast detox.
Yes, it is. You're supposed to go around the house and get rid of all the leaven.
That's right. Get rid of all the yeast. Isn't that?
Right.
Why would you do that? Because it's really yeah. harmful. And so it's a way of keeping it under control.
Yeah.
It's the planet's infected now. We can't.
And it's hard to avoid. I mean, it's in everything. It's unbelievable.
You leave a bowl of stuff open and, you know, something will grow in it very soon.
Right.
You know, even in a cold country such as Scotland, things will still start growing. Yeah. Honestly, even in the fridge. You know, there's stuff at the back of the fridge. You're not supposed to grow cold. It's too cold for you to grow. And it's going, no, we can grow here if we like. We've got super yeasty things and we're purple and we smell bad.
Yeah, but that's a good, you know, I think yeast and bacteria are a good metaphor for an alien type of life form that could, you know, essentially travel across the cosmos and come to Earth on the lowest karmic scale in a way, mm-hmm. And like a mushroom, let's just say, and then grow and, you know, just be there for humans to consume. And infect them through almost a parasite sort of virus.
Yes, it's eating you know? Death.
Yeah.
Eating
yeah.
death. A few years ago, I got this very strong message from my guides, and they said, you are to stop eating death.
Wow.
And I thought, whoa, that's, well, you know.
That's heavy.
You know, at that time, I was like, I liked the hamburger. I liked the, you know, the haggis. I liked all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Eating things. Yeah, I had lots of things that I liked to eat. And I was suitably, nungified and very, you know, not quite as big as Chris Christie. Kind of about, you know, third of the way there, maybe. It's like, he's a mountain. I was like a foothill.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say.
A foothill of Nung. And so the I started getting ill and things because my body was basically teaching me that this is death. And this is what it feels like to eat it. And it rots your body. And it's like my body's been teaching me how to feed it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ask it sometimes, what do you want to eat today? It goes, fish. It always wants fish.
Right.
So here's the thing you can do. You know, ask your body is an elemental, right? It is, its consciousness goes up as far as your, the highest part of its consciousness is your solar plexus.
Uh-huh. Right?
Now, the lowest part of your soul is your solar plexus. And that's how, when we meditate, we bring the highest part of our lower consciousness and the lowest part of our higher consciousness looping together like a Venn diagram. And
that
is how you combine and become the combination, the third. So.
Right.
I like to try, I mean, if you communicate with your lower being, it is in impulses and, you know, monosyllabic words. It's like, imagine a 4-year-old child. It's about the consciousness of a 4-year-old child. So it, you can communicate with it and, but it can be very, you know, stubborn and grumpy, you know,
right.
And, it's got its reasons and,
right.
It's very, very important to make connection with this. And it's through being able to feel feelings through your body.
Absolutely, I agree. Yeah, it's interesting when you look at the depictions of negative entities. The Kundalini energy represented by the serpent usually stops at the stomach chakra system. It doesn't go up to the heart. It stops at the stomach and below, which are basically the animalistic, bestial instincts, you know, the lower self, basically. But to be in touch with that and to honor that, like, for example, you know, I eat very healthy as much as I can, and I have to say I had some fast food, and this was just nothing bad, like a burger or anything like that. This was just you know, a small French fry or something, okay? And I was sick for the whole week. You know, my body just thoroughly just rejected. I was puking and everything else that you can imagine because I had been, you know, for years on a very disciplined diet. It's just funny how the body would just say, no, you're not doing it. And I'm going to make you pay now for, you know, for doing that to me, you know? And, you got to be really aware on the molecular level, you know, what, you know, it's individualized to some degree, I think. But on a large scale, I think we all should be, you know, drinking a lot more water than we should. You know, we don't, urinate clear. We should all piss clear, you know, because, if you're not, you're basically toxic, you know. That was one of the rules that, there's a gathering called Burning Man, which is now a big hipster sort of thing in the United States, but it's about, you know, 100,000 people or so that congregate in Black Rock City, Nevada, where, you know, there's some cool art installations and things like that. And I went one year or two and, you know, some people that were in there, and it was a great situation, but one of their mottos is to make sure you drink a lot of water and to piss clear is what they say. And, you know, having followed that since then, I mean, it's just amazing how much toxins build up in your bladder and in your body that you don't know that, you know, you weren't really there, sure that we're there. And all of a sudden, you know, you bump into friends and you see them and they've changed their faces have been bloated from the pills and errors they've been drinking, right? American beer, which, I mean, you, which is disgusting compared to like a Belhaven or something like that. But, you know, this is, it was, you know, the American type of beer where it's just, you know, just gross. And, I, on the other hand, they said to me, geez, you know, you don't look like you've changed since eighth grade or something like that, you know, and I have a little bit, but really I've kept up the discipline of my body as much as I can, you know, and it gets tougher, you know, as age goes on, of course, but you really have to, put the love into what you make for your food and take that time. I see a lot of people struggling with like how to make food and things like this. It's just like, well, that wasn't really didn't seem too much of a struggle back in the day. You know, I mean, it seemed like people made food with love and care and they were pretty, I mean, there was probably a lot of starvation too, of course, but what I'm saying is there was no, advertisements for, you know, 1 minute rice or anything like that.
Hey,
know?
Listen, Brandon, we're just about out of time.
Oh!
Let's come back from this and, hang on, where are we? Let's see. There we go. we're gonna be leaving soon. Thank you for coming on the journey with me.
Oh, JP, thank you so much. You're great. And I just wanted to come on once and, sorry if I was boring and everything, but I just wanted to say thank you for all your work and I love you, man. And, keep up the great, great, great work.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you so much. So listen, the first, announcement today, the next Alex Collier, number nine, we'll be publishing the promo very soon. Look in the next couple of days on alexcollier.org and, it'll be on the 22nd, I believe. Third Friday, anyway. Good night, everybody. This has been JP with Journeys with JP. Thank you to Brandon Young. Good night, everybody.
Good night.